we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Well, this past week has been amazing. A lot of interesting things have gone on, but Jordan was on Rick and Bubba University, and I was on a local radio show for a couple of hours. And the theme of the week, it was jaw-dropping testimony before the U.S. Congress, where former CDC Director Redfield and three other witnesses testified about what has gone on regarding the narrative of the origins of the virus, of the SARS-2 virus. Because this is at the core, an understanding of who created this virus is, we can't overstate the importance of going forward, how we're going to rectify the problems of the past. If we can't get past this one issue. Jordan, welcome, and what did you think of the testimony?
Yeah, I think it was pretty, in many ways, just kind of exposed how partisan even our scientific institutions are from the standpoint of, if you don't agree with me, you're not going to be even invited to the meeting. And I think that is the antithesis of scientific inquiry. As Stuart and I have always said, even at all our meetings, as well as everyone we want all the people that disagree with us to also come. We don't exclude them because I think, when we're talking about something of fact and science and discovery, you're usually going to have an even better understanding of an issue if people show up that might be able to challenge you on your accepted priors, your accepted understanding. So it's not surprising to me that the way that a person like Anthony Fauci acted was the exact opposite of what scientific inquiry demands, which is a debate with people you disagree with. He's not somebody who desires that. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and play a part of Dr. Redfield's testimony where he's being interviewed about this very thing. So starting now.
I think just to emphasize, in early to mid-January, I did have multiple calls with Fauci, Farrar, and Tedros about how important I thought it was that science get engaged in aggressively pursuing both hypotheses. I also expressed, as a clinical virologist, that I felt it was not scientifically plausible that this virus went from a bat to humans and became one of the most infectious viruses that we have with humans. All viruses are not the same. So when you look at coronaviruses for SARS and MERS, for example, when they entered the human species, which they did via an intermediate, they never learned how to go human to human. Even to this day, they don't know how to go human to human. So you can't equate Ebola with a coronavirus.
Now, why do you think you were excluded from those calls?
I was told to me that they wanted a single narrative and that I obviously had a different point of view.
Okay. In emails following the conference call, four of the 11 scientists told Fauci that they all found the genetic sequence inconsistent with expectations from evolutionary theory, basically what you're saying. However, just 3 days later, these four scientists had drafted a paper arguing the exact opposite, and that's now the infamous proximal origin of SARS-CoV-2. Our investigations show this paper was prompted by Dr. Fauci, among others, with a goal to disprove the lab leak theory. What is the likelihood that these scientists came across additional information just 3 days after making these statements to conclude with such certainty that COVID-19 came from nature instead of the lab leak that they thought it was 3 days earlier?
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate. Again, I've said this before, that this whole approach that was taken on February 1st and subsequently in the month of February, if you really want to be truthful, it's antithetical to science.
Thank you.
Science has debate, and they squashed any debate.
Thank you. Given what we know now and looking at all the conversations in February of 2020 and before the release of the paper. Do you think that Dr. Fauci used this paper to hide the gain of function research created, this virus?
I can't talk about Fauci's motivation.
Do you think that the paper does hide the truth?
I think it's an inaccurate paper that basically was part of a narrative that they were creating. Remember, this pandemic did not start in January at the seafood market. We now know there was infections all the way back into September. This was a narrative that was decided that they were going to say this came from the wet market, and they were going to do everything they could to support it, to negate any discussion about the possibility that this came from a laboratory.
I got 20 seconds left. Dr. Fauci was affirmatively told in an email that NIAID had a monetary relationship with the Wuhan Institute through EcoHealth Alliance. He was told this in January 27th of 2020. Do you think that Dr. Fauci intentionally lied under oath to Senator Paul when he vehemently denied NIH's funding of gain-of-function research?
I think there's no doubt that NIH was funding gain-of-function research.
Is it likely that American tax dollars funded the gain-of-function research that created this virus?
I think it did, not only from NIH, but from the State Department, USAID, and from DOD.
So, again, there we have somebody who's not just, you know, somebody speaking on a podcast, but the actual head of the CDC confirming what we knew in some ways, and actually being respectful enough not to know the intentions of somebody. But I can guarantee you that a lot of times actions follow, if you follow the actions of somebody, they're a lot more useful than what they say. And I think Redfield, again, even in part of this testimony, says, you know, I was left out. I mean, what do I know? I'm just a virologist and the head of the CDC. So if he can be left out, again, you know, just goes to show you, again, Fauci's not a virologist. And we were dealing with, what were we dealing with, this, Stuart?
Yeah, we were dealing with a virus that clearly was man-made.
Yeah. So again, I think, you know, until proven otherwise, at least in the actions that were taken, the people that got together did that for a particular reason. And the particular reason was this does not look good. And it appears that we are likely going to be tracked and back to this.
I don't know if you saw it or not, but there was an interview where Neil Cavuto the next day interviewed Fauci, Thorny Fauci, and he asked him about it, and Fauci just got irritated at him for asking it. And the hubris of that guy, I don't know if we've ever seen a more evil person in our country. It was amazing that finally, it's taken 3 years for the media. It's been so obvious, though. It's been so obvious from the beginning that Fauci and his crew have been maniacal. They have been so utterly evil throughout this and deceptive. And he lied to Senator Paul in sworn testimony at least three times in the first year and a half of the pandemic. And then when he gets put in exposed by Redfield, he gets angry, and this guy is so pathological. He is so easy. He lies so readily, and he gets irritated when somebody challenges him. It is 43 years in the making that this horrible, horrible, evil, wicked man has been allowed to do what he has done to the world, much less to Alabama.
And you can see how well he takes disagreement and dissent, right, Stuart?
Right.
You know, seems to be a very, very dispassionate purveyor of science, which is what we need in our administrators, right? I mean, again, I'm being facetious here, but I mean, he exposes his problem.
Yeah, what's so amazing is he has been this way. It's so easy to look at him and see that he's lying every time he opens his mouth. And yet only Senators Ron Johnson and Rand Paul are the only two senators that are really on board with challenging this guy for the last 3 years. I certainly hope Senator Tuberville, our senator from Alabama, and the rest of those on the committee begin challenging this narrative we've been forced to endure the last 3 years. But apparently they're not. UAB, the largest employer in Alabama, has been running the show here with the Hospital Association, Don Williamson, from the beginning, along with the complicity of the state health officer and the medical association. And it's about time these people were exposed and told to exit stage left, because they have done irreparable damage. And finally, it was just amazing testimony. It was 2 hours of riveting testimony. It was shameful how the Democrats treated the witnesses. There were not only Dr. Redfield, but three others, one of which was on their side. So there were four witnesses. Three of them were invited by the Republicans and one by the Democrats. That's normal.
Yeah, but even the one on the other side, which I don't know why there's sides on something like where things came from. But, right. I mean, he was pretty amazed that, you know, when he was asked yes or no questions, he couldn't even answer the yes or no questions because they would have revealed what he believed. He couldn't, right. You know, when it, so again, you're talking about somebody who knows, but he can't, he's there representing the Infectious Disease Society of America, which has already stuck their neck out on Fauci's side. And the problem is the guy that they went to bat for is proving to be somebody who lied to them in some ways too. So,
yeah, he was God of Johns Hopkins.
Yeah, lies beget lies, unfortunately. And that's
right.
Where we are. We'll listen to, actually, on the next part of this, we'll listen to the actual introductory testimony of Redfield, because I think it's very useful. He kind of goes through kind of some of the stuff he was talking about, which is even stuff that I didn't know. I will say the fact that Rand Paul and Ron Johnson were the only ones to see through it. Rand Paul, thankfully, is somebody who's got a scientific background. Ron Johnson, I think, just had very, very good counsel. But it shows you that in a country that supposedly has free debate and is very open to new scientific discoveries, we've set up a system that is as authoritarian and in some ways fascistic as any in regards to our health health sciences and scientific discovery.
I think that's an accurate statement. I do not think that's hyperbole, because there was a recent article that I was I saw that UAB receives 1%, is in the top 1% of grant receivers in the country from NIH. UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham, our alma mater. And we used to be proud of being from there and having been trained there, but, or I did. The deep state has so many tentacles in everything, and there's no way that you're going to get rid of them overnight. But dadgummit, we need our senator, who I'm sure is receiving a lot of funds since he's on the HHS committee for the Senate, Tuberville. He needs to wake up and start doing the bidding of the people. And he has been absolutely wrong for not stepping up and doing more than like these, the other two that I mentioned. But this is a call to arms.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, I mean, you set up this kind of classic patronage system, kind of like the old Medici's or the, you know, the Roman Church, where they were had, you know, you need these goodwill from these guys who dole out these huge grants. And to do that, you can never speak ill or question the things that they say. And that is just going to set up a infrastructure of approval and go along with kind of, you know, struggling to put it into words, but the, you know, this is going to set up a very passive mechanism for getting everybody to agree with you. So, and I think that the last 3 years showed that there was no question. Fauci said it. Yep. Fauci dictated it, as did the Pope, as did the Medicis. It's that's as if God said it, and that's the problem. Yeah, is because that's where they get their lifeline. That's where they get their life. UAB's life is connected not to the state of Alabama. It's connected to the funding from a federal agency that's run by a person that holds the purse strings quite tightly.
Yeah, and let's be clear. What Fauci has done has been illegal. And the reason I bring that up, it was interesting. The following day, they were having a hearing on the politicization of the FBI. And none other than Senator Paul and Senator Grassley gave testimony before the Congress about the politicization of the FBI against themselves. And the reason I bring that up is because, not because Senator Ron Johnson's our hero, but because of the fact that it is clear that normally you have checks and balances. And when the FBI has gone so far off the rails like they have the last 6 to 10 years, how do you get back on track? It's going to take monumental efforts to overcome these institutional depravities. But we're in for the fight. We're not. We've been intimidated. They've been tried to intimidate us from the beginning, but clearly the truth will win. It's just a matter of understanding how much damage is going to go on before it's allowed to be exposed and to rule the day. But Senator Tuberville needs to wake up and be a part of the fight. He has not been. He has been AWOL in the fight against COVID.
All right, so we will be back. This is America Out Loud Pulse. Dr. Jordan Von Dutter, Stuart Dinkersley. And we are going to continue to listen to Redfield's testimony.
We wouldn't go a day without washing our hands, brushing our teeth, and washing our nose. Well, wait, we wash our nose? Yes, the number one place where bacteria, viruses, and pollen enter the body is through the nose. So the average person breathes over 23,000 times a day. That's 23,000 opportunities for bacteria, viruses, and irritants to get into your nose and make you sick. For an extra layer of protection, wash your nose with Clear. That is Clear, X-L-E-A-R. Clear's drug-free nasal spray features xylitol, an ingredient proven to block adhesion of many nasty bacteria and viruses and effectively clean, not just rinse like a saline, but wash your nose. Clear nasal spray quickly alleviates congestion, opens your airway, and ensures your body's natural defenses are strong. Read the research studies for yourself at clear.com. That's X-L-E-A-R.com. Protect yourself from the pathogens and junk you breathe. Pick up a bottle for you and your family today.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep is infuriating. Your mind races, you toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's fast-paced digital age makes it tougher. You're not alone. Poor sleep affects over 70% of us. The CDC even labeled insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created REM Sleep to help you quickly fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake refreshed. Unlike other supplements that don't work, REM Sleep is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients, supporting all four stages of sleep using calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Over 1,000 reviews with an average star rating of over 4.4 proves it works. Take back your sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
Congress is hosting amazing discovery of things heretofore that have been ignored and or illegally done and or illegally hidden. And we're in particular talking about the testimony before Congress about what the origins of the virus are. And Dr. Redfield, Jordan, let's play that video where Dr. Redfield, the former CDC director, gives his introductory remarks.
So this is his opening statement, which I think has a lot of good facts in it, that facts that you may have not heard until now.
But perhaps more relevant for the purpose of this hearing, my 45 years in medicine have been focused on the study of viruses. I'm a virologist by training and by practice. Prior to my time at CDC, I spent more than 20 years as a U.S. Army physician and medical researcher at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research, where I served as the chief of the Department of Retroviral Research, and I worked in virology, immunology, clinical research at the forefront of AIDS epidemic and other viral threats. In 1996, I co-founded the Institute of Human Virology at the University of Maryland in partnership with the state of Maryland, the city of Baltimore, and the University System of Maryland, where I served as the director of clinical research and care, and I also served as a tenured professor of medicine, microbiology, and immunology, chief of infectious disease, and vice chair of medicine at the university. After my time at CDC, I served as the senior public health advisor to Governor Hogan in the state of Maryland. As COVID-19 began to spread across the world, there were two competing hypotheses about the origin of this virus that needed to be vigorously explored. The first hypothesis is the possibility that COVID-19 infections in humans were the result of a spillover event from nature. This is a situation in which the virus naturally mutates and becomes more transmissible from one species to another, in this case, from bats to humans via an intermediate species. This is what happened in previous outbreaks of SARS and MERS and earlier coronaviruses that emerged from bats and spread through an intermediate animal. The second hypothesis is the possibility that the virus evolved in a laboratory involved in gain-of-function research. This is a type of research in which scientists seek to increase the transmissibility or pathogenicity of an organism in order to better understand that organism and inform preparedness efforts and the development of countermeasures such as therapeutics and vaccines. Under this theory, COVID infected the general population after it was accidentally leaked from a lab in China. From the earliest days of the pandemic, my view was both theories about the origin needed to be aggressively and thoroughly examined. Based on my initial analysis of the data, I came to believe, and I still believe today, that it indicates that COVID-19 more likely was the result of an accidental lab leak than a result of a natural spillover event. This conclusion is based primarily on the biology of the virus itself, including the rapid high infectivity for human-to-human transmission, which would then predict the rapid evolution of new variants, as well as a number of other important factors, which also include the unusual actions in and around Wuhan in the fall of 2019, all of which I'm happy to discuss today. Even given the information that surfaced in 3 years since the COVID-19 pandemic began, some have contended that there's really no point in investigating the origin of this virus. I strongly disagree. There is a global need to know what we are dealing with in COVID virus because it affects how we approach the problem to try to prevent the next pandemic. The understanding of the origin of COVID is critical to future science research, particularly as it affects ongoing ethical debate around gain-of-function research. Gain-of-function research has long been controversial within the scientific community. In my own opinion, COVID-19 pandemic presents a case study on the potential dangers of such research. While many believe that gain-of-function research is critical to get ahead of ongoing ethical debate around gain-of-function research. Gain-of-function research has long been controversial within the scientific community. In my own opinion, COVID-19 COVID-19 pandemic presents a case study on the potential dangers of such research. While many believe that gain-of-function research is critical to get ahead of viruses by developing vaccines, in this case, I believe it was the exact opposite. Unleashing a new virus to the world without any means of stopping it and resulting in the deaths of millions of people. Because of this, it's my opinion that we should call for a moratorium on gain-of-function research until we have a broader debate and we come to a consensus at a community about the value of gain-of-function research. This debate should not be limited to the scientific community. If the decision is to continue with gain-of-function research, then it must be determined how and where to conduct that research in a safe, responsible, and effective way. I thank you for inviting me here today. As we explore this important topic, I look forward to answering your questions.
Again, that was Redfield's introduction, but I think one of the biggest things he points out, and I think is, again, the question of our time for this scientific endeavor was regarding gain-of-function research, who does it? Is it ethical to do it in the first place? And then the reality that this is a man with 45 years of experience that was not part of a lot of the decision-making that was going on. And again, the conflict of interest that are present are shown. So again, the conflict of interest would be that the CDC technically did not have one. They, you know, again, they are a government agency, so there's always some conflict. But Fauci's organizations, the NIAID, as well as the NIH, which fund all the scientists, and all these scientists are pushing the envelope of what we can do with certain types of research. And those people are not only being funded by Fauci and his cohort, but the last thing they want is them to be themselves to be wrong about the risk benefit ratio in regards to this gain of function research. So again, they want this to happen, but they obviously don't want the source of the outbreak to be the types of research they're doing, because if it is, then just as Redfield suggested here, a moratorium will be put on this type of research. And for the most part, it will be very detrimental to their scientific endeavors. And again, that shows you that we have a conflict of interest, because the people that are pushing the natural origin theory have every reason to want it to be that way. And therefore, they, in a sense, just as Fauci proved, they confirm their bias, because confirming their bias is really, I mean, it's a survival mode. They want to not have evidence that this kind of research is the cause, because if this research kind of research is the cause of this overall pandemic, then it is likely that this kind of research will be put on hold, if not eliminated, which would mean that a lot of what they do is no longer paid for, valid, sponsored, whatever you want to say. So again, with that, I've got a couple more things that I want to share in regards to this testimony. One of them has to do with when Jim Jordan actually starts questioning one of them. So I'll play that now.
If it may have been a lab, may have been nature, we're supposed to look forward, then why did Dr. Fauci work so hard for just one of those theories? Why was it so important to push one over the other? Dr. Barris said, oh, we should entertain all hypotheses. Dr. Fauci had his hypothesis, how this started. We should entertain all of them. But that's not what happened. That is definitely not what happened. 3 years ago, if you thought it came from a lab, if you raised that, you were called a nut job. You got censored on Twitter. You were blacklisted on Twitter. You were even called a crackpot by the very scientist who in late January sent emails to Dr. Fauci and said it came from a lab. They called you crackpot. Is that right, Dr. Redfield?
I think the most upsetting thing to me was the Baltimore Sun calling me a racist because I said this came from a Wuhan lab.
Dr. Redfield, you ran the CDC and you were on the coronavirus task force. Is that right?
Correct.
That was formed on January 29th, 2020. Is that right?
Correct.
2 days later, Dr. Fauci gets an email from Dr. Anderson, which says what? Virus looks engineered, virus not consistent with evolutionary theory. Is that accurate?
That's my understanding.
Next day, I know. Did he share that email with you, by the way, Dr. Redfield?
No.
As a member of the task force, as a head of CDC, did he share that email with you?
No.
Okay. Next day, February 1st, Dr. Gary sends Dr. Fauci another email. That email says, I don't know how this happens in nature, but it would be easy to do in a lab. Did he share that email with you, Dr. Redfield?
No.
You didn't see either one of those emails, even though you're head of CDC, even though you're on the coronavirus task force that had been formed just 2 days, 3 days earlier.
No.
3 days later, Dr. Anderson and Dr. Gary, who told us it came from a lab and emails to Dr. Fauci that Dr. Fauci wouldn't let Dr. Redfield see, 3 days later, they changed their position 180 degrees. The question is why? Mr. Wade, why would they change their position that fast when the only intervening event is a conference call with Dr. Fauci, the guy who wouldn't let Dr. Redfield see the very emails that they had sent him, Dr. Redfield, head of CDC on the coronavirus task force? Why would they change their position, Dr. Wade, or Mr. Wade?
Well, this question does lie at the heart of the issue. What is pertinent, it seems to me, is there's no new scientific evidence that we can see that came available between these dates, the January 31st and Feb 4.
Right. There's no new. I think you're. Go ahead.
So you have to ask if there were other kinds of influence available. Now, it is true that Dr. Fauci and Dr. Farrer in London were very powerful research officials, and between them, they controlled.
I read your testimony. I saw
okay.
that. Yeah.
So
why don't you cut to the chase and tell them what you really think was the reason?
I don't know what the reason was.
I know what it was.
Go ahead.
I'll let you say it because I read your testimony. I think you said it in your testimony, too. Maybe you're reluctant to say it here, but go ahead.
Well, if you're looking at the timeline, on May 21st, a few weeks after the Nature Medicine article had come out, two of the signatories of the original email to Dr. Fauci, that's Dr. Anderson and Dr. Gary, were awarded a $9 million grant for
them. So there's 9 million reasons why they changed their mind. I knew you'd get to it. I read that last night. 3 months after... So 3 days after they say it came from a lab, they changed their position, and the only intervening event's a conference call with Dr. Fauci and Dr. Collins. Again, a call that Mr. Redfield was not allowed to be on, the head of CDC and on the coronavirus task force. And then 3 months later, Shazam, they get $9 million from Dr. Fauci. Well, isn't that something? Isn't that something? That's why we want to talk to these guys. That's why Chairman Winstrom wants to bring in Dr. Anderson and Dr. Gary and ask them a series of questions so we can get to the bottom of this, so we can move forward and deal with this. Now, here's the key question. Like, I'm just a common sense guy from Ohio. I majored in wrestling in college, but I got a degree in economics. You're supposed to get a degree when you go to college. I got one in economics. And one of the things they tell you about is a thing called opportunity cost. So when you're spending your time making sure that the country believes only one of these theories, you could have been doing what Dr. Redfield was doing in our government, trying to figure out how we deal with this virus. And what was Dr. Fauci doing? He was trying to cover his backside, and everybody knows it. And that's a part that ticks us off, because this is the highest paid guy in our government getting all kinds of money to tell us things that were not accurate, because we now know. U.S. tax dollars went to a lab in China, a lab that was not up to code, a lab that was doing gain-of-function research, and that's where this thing most definitely came from. And Dr. Fauci had to prove, no, he can't have that news getting out. And that's why he did what he did, to the exclusion of a brilliant guy running our CDC, kept him out of the loop. Keeping him out of the loop probably potentially could have harmed America. That's the thing that ticks us all off. And that's why, Mr. Chairman, this hearing is so darn important, and we get to the bottom of really what happened.
What Jim Jordan is kind of alluding to there is exactly what we're talking about. It's covering yourself before, especially when you're in the government, covering yourself is not the first things that you should be doing. So, again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley. We will be back for the last part of our show to discuss just what Jim Jordan said.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health. Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
AmericaOutLoud.com. If you can't find it here, you can't find it anywhere. We are the pulse and voice of everyday American thought, working hard to earn your trust for 7 incredible years and counting. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan. A plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, ICSC-climate.com.
Showed us the testimony there, really from Jim Jordan, just kind of going over the facts and what has been presented to him. But the reality is that these men who are supposed to be at the highest levels helping really the health of our nation, were more interested in covering their own rears and also protecting their own really scientific inquiries rather than pushing for more evidence to help us fight a disease that's been responsible for killing millions of people throughout the world. So again, that is part and parcel the example that I would use to say, there is something corrupt in the way that science is funded, pursued, you name it, here in our country. And sometimes, again, a good state like Alabama, for instance, has a very dysfunctional way that its health authority is really administered, and it's actually even unconstitutional. And again, sometimes men are fallible, and we set up systems that are have especially deep moral hazards with them. And so I think these systems that we have set up, a lot of the actual financing of medicine and medical schools having all this power and becoming these billion-dollar billion dollar enterprises is a relatively new phenomenon. It's probably in the last 40 to 50 years. So it's kind of an accretion of power. But sometimes you have to recognize that that's where the power is, and the power is corruptible. So, Stuart, what do you think about Jim Jordan's kind of analysis there?
Yeah, it was interesting for many reasons. But if I could go back and mention something that Director Redfield said. He said the most offensive thing was when the Maryland paper called him racist because he said it was from Wuhan. The context of that statement, of course, it's by itself a very sad indictment of where we are. But and throughout the hearing, the Democrats, if you've never watched one of these hearings, they go from one side to the next and asking questions of the witnesses. The Democrats, several of them, called these witnesses racist for just ludicrous reasons. I mean, it's very sad that they would go to this type of slanderous behavior and actions and words, because here we are having a scientific dialogue and they can't defend the indefensible, obviously. And so they go at it attacking the witnesses' character. And it was ludicrous. One of the instances was where this former editor of the New England Journal, I believe.
He was a science magazine and the New York Times, or the Science Times. Very, very right-wing
right.
Establishments.
Yeah. So this former editor of the science section for the New York Times had written a book. And none other than David Duke, the grand wizard of the KKK, in one of his writings, said that he liked it or something to that effect. And as a result of it, this guy was called racist. I would have responded the following. You know, Jesus was continually challenged by the devil because the devil would quote scripture. It doesn't mean that the devil believed in everything that the scripture says, of course. But the truth is unfortunately a lost commodity in this endeavor that we're in, this world of COVID that we're stuck in, as in many others. But it was amazing that the Democrats, really their only course of action, with the exception maybe of one of the congressmen.
Yeah, I think it was Dingell, the Michigan Congress lady. At least a little bit. And again, at the same time that they were saying that, the Democrats were claiming that they wanted a non-political hearing. And,
right.
You know, and you're just like, you know, what's more political than ad hominem attacks about who talked about a book you wrote? I mean, you know, that to me, that's I think in some ways, and I think this isn't the only time that this was done. I think a lot of these hearings, the only defense that the other side has, and not again that this should be a one-sided issue, but is to attack the purveyor of the facts. And I'm sorry, facts are facts. This is how it happened. These men, I think actually Mr. Wade is who you're talking about,
right.
The editor of Science in the New York Times. I mean, he was there because he is somebody that understands how things are published in not only the lay scientific, you know, periodicals, but also in the journals. And so his was to say, why did we get this origin story pushed through prestigious science journals? And why did The Lancet publish something with somebody who coddled it together that has an extreme conflict of interest? How did that happen? And I think the guy who's editor of Science Magazine and the New York Times seems to be a pretty reasonable guy to ask how that could happen. And evidently all the Democrats cared about was some person who has a bad past telling the world that they like this guy's book. I mean, again, that means that to tear anyone down, all we have to do is have somebody say positive things about something you wrote, and then your testimony itself is besmirched.
Yeah, I was interesting, and we're taking a side trail here, but real quick, I was reading an article about if you look at the six leading scientific journals in the country, the Lancet, New England Journal, British Journal of Medicine, JAMA, and a couple of others, you can see amongst the top six scientific journals, the ratio of lab-leaning to zoo-leaning articles in 36 months was 7 to 139. So out of 146 articles, only 7 of them believed it might be a lab leak. Among all other journals, the ratio was 1 to 1.66, so 61 to 101. And so what that tells you is what his main point is, that the whole publishing section, the whole publishing realm has been co-opted by liars. And especially
self-serving people, which makes them liars when something's right. Inconvenient, but they're self-serving for sure.
Right. And so we had all of this racism, and theater, but then the science was coming out too. And I thought that Redfield's explanation of how the virus was clearly, there were clear markers of it being created. And he mentioned part of it there in his opening statements. But there was a lot of science being explained throughout the, what was it, a two-hour hearing? And and it's undeniable. And what if you haven't heard this or appreciated what is going on here, think about this. The United States created this virus that has killed 7 million people in the world, over 1 million of our own citizens, 1.2 million of our own citizens, and supposedly, who knows what the numbers really are. But it's not only that, so we will be culpable in the history, in the view of history going forward, we are culpable. Of course, we used the Chinese to do something that was illegal here. But and Fauci was the point man for all this. And so once this crack opens in the dam, the rest of all the lies are going to be revealed. But it's clear that the majority of Americans are on our side. Of course, that is not true of the scientists, the doctors that we know. But clearly, the majority of Americans are on our side because they're simply not getting the vaccines anymore. They're not.
Share exactly what you're talking about with Redfield. So here's the video where he goes a little bit more in depth.
Yeah.
Ones making the COVID investigation political. Why they don't want to investigate the origins of COVID-19 that killed millions of people, I will never understand. My first question is for Dr. Redfield. A witness in our roundtable last week said that it was a no-brainer that the virus came from the Wuhan lab. When you were director of the CDC, did Dr. Fauci ever explain to you why he didn't believe the virus came from the Wuhan lab and why he actively worked to silence that theory?
Dr. Fauci's position, as those who thought a spillover, took the position that it was most likely a spillover event because that's what happened with SARS and that's what happened with MERS. Right? And I think it's important to look at, prior to 2012, we didn't really have another mechanism other than nature. We weren't doing gain-of-function research. Right? I'm a clinical virologist. I tried to explain to Dr. Fauci, who's an immunologist, that this virus, SARS and MERS, when they infected a man from the intermediate host, civet cat in the case of SARS and a camel in the case of MERS, they never learned how to go human to human. So those original outbreaks were less than 1,000 people, and the epidemics died. And so when everyone thought this was SARS-like, well, that's gonna die too. But this virus was immediately the most infectious virus, not the most, I think probably right behind measles, virus that we've ever seen infect man. So I immediately said, wait a second, this isn't natural. And then you go back and look at the literature and you find in 2014, this lab actually published a paper that they put the H2 receptor into humanized mice so it can infect human tissue. And then you learn that the new COVID, which came from bats, now can hardly replicate in bats.
Yeah.
So how does that happen? So I said that my view as a virologist, again, my hypothesis, and I never discredit them for their hypothesis, it's the spillover, was that this was most likely to come from the lab. And we need to aggressively investigate both hypotheses.
Thank you.
So again, I mean, I think he states it very succinctly there. We're using old data where we didn't have gain of function research entered into the realm. And so it's not surprising when you think about it. I never thought about why SARS didn't have a gain of function research origin. Well, there wasn't gain of function research going on, which is a pretty good point.
Yeah, no question. But he also threw out it. I mean, there was a, it was unfortunately because of the Democrats, a lot of politics and not as much science as we would like, but it was forced to be that way by the Democrats. But the but he gave a lot of science, I thought, that was very good, like what you just played. Now, I think it's important for any physician that's not been willing to accept the truth heretofore, listen to.
One last thing, I think this is the last thing that I want to share of him, that he goes back and talks about the declassified info now, which is also very useful too, because it shows you.
Clearly, there was strong evidence that there was a significant event that happened in that laboratory in September. It's now been declassified. You can read it. I'm sure there's more classified information around it.
Thank you.
What we're talking about was there were three things that happened in September. One is there was the actual original outbreak, in a sense, from the lab. The lab itself had a huge undertaking to change and clean the ventilation system. And then the lab itself was taken from civilian hands and put in military hands. And then lastly, the actual sequencing they were screwing with was erased from the databases. So those are four pretty, you know, again, as Metzl in this testimony says, it's not a smoking gun, but the gun is definitely quite warm to the touch. And I think that's, you know, again, what we have to go with, because I would much rather take some warm guns as opposed to Fauci's word for it. So what do you think, Stuart?
Yeah, no question. It was bloom is coming off of the rose here with all the lies being revealed. What we're hopeful of, and it's very important to understand that this is for the first time in 3 years, because the Republicans now control the House, we're finally having investigations, and they are starting these investigations in order of importance. I think this should have been the first, not the third, issue that they have taken up. But the point is, it's of high importance. All these lies that they have been perpetuating and killing people with are now being exposed. I think, in my estimation, there is no question that Fauci is the biggest mass murderer in American history. And unfortunately, I'm afraid that as time goes on, it will be revealed that he is the biggest mass murderer in human history. But this is the
thing about what they're doing, and I think is smart, because a lot of people say, well, why don't you just bring Fauci in there? Well, Fauci would just obfuscate. What instead they're doing is bringing a bunch of people in to get on the record, and then they're going to be able to cross-examine Fauci with statements by Redfield, which is a wonderful way to do it. So you don't bring in the criminal initially. You get the testimony from everybody else about the criminal's actions. So, So again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse. We will see you next week.